bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to The Big Show. It's the second part of the Tech News Today crossover. We've decamped from the Twitch studios over in Petaluma, and we're now over here in the UK, and everyone's physically here, of course, by the magic of Skype, and we're here to discuss the week's technology. Joining me, I've got a great panel, incredible panel. Top left, starting off, James Hart, usual bloke.
Yeah, pretty much. I made it home in good time tonight as well. The M1 has not been kind to me in recent days, but tonight the Pixies cleared it.
Really? And, they knew, you see. They knew that it was a special event. Mm. Next to him, Ayaz Akhtar. First time on BTN. More than welcome, mate. You'll never come back. This is a career-ruining network.
Oh, good. I was looking forward to not doing anything this week, so this is the right start for me.
People who make a living out of tech punditry never usually come on this show.
Well, it's a good thing I have my day job as a deli counterman.
Good man. Good man. How you doing, pal?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I love that pet behind you. That Commodore pet, that's the first computer I ever looked at and had no clue what to do with it.
Well, that's why I put it on the shelf. It doesn't do much. It holds down.
Does that work?
I haven't tried to mess with it.
All the old games consoles and all the old computers seem to run just fine.
I believe that one does actually work.
Yeah, see, it doesn't surprise me. Have you got a 5.5-inch floppy disk for it? To load up the program?
I'm sure it's somewhere. We have so many things in the Twitch studios.
Because Sarah's got a pile. Likely. She's kept every single one she's ever used since the dawn of time. So she's got something that could run in that, I'm sure. Next, talking to Sarah. Here she is, from Ireland, against the Red Curtain. How you doing, girl?
I'm very well, thank you. I was actually thinking, I remember the Commodore PET, and the one thing that I didn't like about it was the horrible keyboard on it. It was like plastic keys in a square block. I know that sounds a bit like a keyboard now, but it was absolutely horrible. But apart from that, it was a great computer.
I'm trying to remember the CBM. There was a CBM that followed it, which had a much nicer, clankier keyboard. Can't remember what it was called now.
Okay, fair enough. The quiet man of the group is now joining us. Jason Howell, how you doing, mate?
How's it going? I hope not to be quiet.
Hardly anyone knows what you look like. You're the pasty bloke.
I'm usually kind of shrouded behind a whole lot of technology, and quite frankly, I feel way more comfortable when I have all that technology to hide behind.
So yeah, that's
vampire.
There's a reason that we don't do video feedback here, mate.
Understandable. Although I do have I'm doing probably the mortal sin in live video casting. I'm watching in a window the delayed version of the video cast, so I kind of have an idea of who's talking at what point 10 seconds ago.
We're going to get to it. I promise we're going to do it, but it's not yet.
The secret to doing that, Jason, I'm sure you know, is absolutely make sure you mute it so that it gets completely confusing.
Yep.
And in the centre, the kingpin, last but by no means least, the bearded wonder, Tom Merritt. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing well, Ewan. This is fun. This is the perfect conclusion
it is.
To my day.
Yeah. Conclusion to your day at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. I'm done by now. But.
Yeah, just do a half day today. Mosey on in the studio, record a bit of sound. Slink
I do
off.
More story selection before 9 a.m.
What you're actually saying is, Tom, by 1 o'clock you're drinking.
Oh, it's by one, yeah, for sure.
By one, no question. No,
why
sure.
not? I have to say, Tom, in that shot, it looks like you've got a tower of tech behind you.
I do, actually. I am positioning the camera so that it makes it look even more looming.
Something frightening over your top left shoulder.
That's Max Trollbot.
Oh.
Right?
Yep.
That thing?
I'm impressed by the fact that you know what everything is just by where somebody says
without even looking.
Without even looking. Yeah, that's impressive, Tom.
How Skype up here. We were talking about Linux during the TNT show, and Eternal Sword said, how is Skype on Linux?
Well, Skype on this laptop, this Linux laptop that I use, has problems with audio back to me. for some reason that I haven't figured out. So I'm actually using the MacBook Pro right now. I just
Skype on Linux.
I left that alone. I'm still troubleshooting it.
Skype on Linux generally is pretty poor.
Yeah,
I found that on Mint, it's actually pretty good. That's the exception to the rule.
You know, I've been thinking about ripping Ubuntu off there and putting Mint on. Maybe I will.
It is awesome. I'm a convert from one to Tom. It's the sound, the handling of sound is a lot better, and there's a lot of other things that are actually a lot better as well.
There's a school of thought because although Ubuntu has brought it to a degree of popularity, it's almost like an entry level thing, and there are better Linux distributions out there, and Mint is one that's often kind of it's a little bit further ahead in the development, and you kind of need to take that step to get to it. Really worth it.
Worth it. The week in check. What's been going on? Well, the whole pile of stuff. Anonymous has supposedly hacked the site for the UN talks that are going on about regulation for the internet. We'll talk about that in a minute. The EU has issued its largest ever fine for antitrust, a $1.5 billion against a cartel of six companies who managed to fix the price of CRTs 10 years ago. Up to date. Cutting edge. There we go. And Eric Schmidt has written off Microsoft. They're saying he's not one of the big four anymore in the tech world. The entire world runs on Microsoft and they're not one of the big four. And Tim Cook says that some Macs are going to be made in the USA. Subsidy. Subsidy.
Hilarious.
Subsidy. Where should we start? Do you want to start with the EU? EU has managed to issue an antitrust series of fines against, and I've got a list of firms here, and I want to make sure I get it right so I don't get sued.
Good idea, Ewan.
Thanks, mate. For Philips, LG, Samsung are in there, and I can't see the others now, but that's how trouble with being dyslexic and looking on the fly. 1.47.
Philips.
Philips, thank you. We've got that. LG, Samsung.
Got the biggest one, yeah.
Yeah, those are the main, there's six of them total, but those are the big three. $1.47 billion, that's an enormous amount of money, but probably not split amongst six of them. But the thing that really annoys me is CRTs were always expensive, yes, but I never felt like the price was being fixed, but obviously it was.
I thought it was just the delivery costs.
It was Amazon. No, it was TNT or someone like that, one of the couriers. No, I mean,
they were hefty.
I mean, has anyone in the States looked into this, guys? I mean, the antitrust generally, you know, if the EU issues something, it's great, it's fantastic, it looks after the consumer, but you guys aren't backward at this kind of stuff. If there really was a cartel there, has the US not acted either?
I don't know why the US hasn't seemed to be that interested in this. The only thing I've heard is that all six of those companies are challenging the ruling, and so maybe the United States is sort of waiting to see how it all plays out after any challenges or appeals or whatever. But it also, it's 10 years ago, it's CRTs. Like, I understand that you have to punish people for things that they did, but it certainly doesn't affect anything now, not in the least.
I mean, it affected an awful lot 10 years ago. I mean, I was part of a project that was being built and CRTs were the installed item at that project. And there was a phenomenal amount of money paid for out-of-date technology by the time it got installed, it has to said, because 10 years...
It was the case, wasn't it, that if you went for the sort of the base model, you know, 15-inch model, you probably paid it. But as soon as you went above that, 17-inch, 19-inch, you could get really big CRTs, but you would be spending thousands of pounds on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the big ones where it was so expensive, and they did seem a bit disproportionately expensive considering the price of the little ones.
I had a 21-inch CRT, and it was enormous.
Yeah.
21-inch, I mean, it's 4-3 ratio, so it was pretty big to start with anyway with that. But it was probably 1.5 times as long depth-wise as it was screen-wise.
This is the thing. God,
yeah, I used to put them in the front seat when I moved.
Yeah.
You know, with the screen facing towards the seat.
And you faced down. Didn't you do the face down?
No, I always did screen facing backwards.
No, screen face down, dude, because that's where the weight was. Get to carry them face down as well.
I think I always put it screen face backwards into the back of the seat too, but that makes perfect sense. Probably should have been down.
Down was the way. Yeah.
Maybe they were, maybe these were just so expensive because they thought they could get away with charging by the pound.
Iaz is sitting there going, what's a CRT?
Well, I had a CRT TV. I had a 32-inch CRT, a CRT TV in my living room. And
32-inch CRT?
32-inch, yeah. It was a massive. Wow. It actually had even a component in, so it actually could have
a TV.
An Xbox. It was ridiculous. It was super heavy, and
I was going to say, I,
Go on, sir.
I was going to say I struggled to lift my 17-inch CRT monitor.
Well, have you still got one?
Oh. I know I keep most things, Ewan, but no, not that.
Well, this is the crazy thing.
Way too much space.
This is the crazy thing. We've got a 10-year-old technology we're discussing, and I can see in front of me, I've got sort of one of these hand-me-down, I think it's a 22-inch telly, but nobody, you can't even give the damn things away now.
Oh, mm-mm. You see so many of these TVs now, and they were five, seven, 10 years ago, quote unquote, big screen TVs. Now they're on the side of the road, and yeah, people aren't picking them up because you need two people just to lift them up off the sidewalk.
And it's kind of amazing to think that within 10 years ago, within the lifetime of the genesis of this lawsuit we're talking about, people were wondering if what was holding up the switch to HDTVs. And now it's over. Digital TV transition, high definition broadcasts. Everybody's got a flat panel television. It's not even an issue anymore.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, what's interesting about it is actually I wonder. It's really difficult to tell, even in hindsight. But because the price of CRTs, large CRTs, was so high, the price of even bigger than a 15-inch LCD. I must have been £300 for a 17-inch. LCD monitor only sort of 6 or 7 years ago, because there was an expectation that LCD monitors would be a premium item and therefore had to be at least on a par with the CRT equivalent. And so in some respects, not only did the cartel affect CRTs, but it caused to start with an increase in the price of LCDs, which were beyond what they needed to be. Especially because you can buy now, what is it, a 24-inch monitor now for $100, £100.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that gets me is that they did this all on the golf course. It's like you got all these blokes walking around and saying, what should we do? I'll tell you what, let's make it really frigging heavy. Put lead in. Make it even heavier for the buggers. So when they put it in their seat facing backwards, it'll still rip the seatbelt apart.
Give me a 5-iron.
That's what you need. You need that. They were just... days of having cartel meetings on the golf course. That only happens in the drug world now. Unless you're in Colombia, doesn't happen anymore, does it? It's all done in boardrooms. Over Skype.
You would know better than I.
Over Skype.
I would imagine that it probably is done on the golf course, Ewan. Would you want to risk doing it in the boardroom?
Where there's microphones.
I thought it was the back rooms of restaurants, I thought, was the place they do these things.
Yeah, I think that was for book price fixing or something, right? That was an Italian restaurant. It was like this, like a silly scene from The Godfather or something.
a bloke with the dough balls stuffed down in his cotton look going, we've got to fix the prices.
Leave the gun, take the price fixing chart.
Absolutely.
I think you could do a better Italian accent than that, Ewan.
I had my fingers down my neck. Give me a break.
Okay.
You see somebody walking in with a flip chart. All the diners just going, no, we didn't see anything. No.
So has anyone actually worked out how much more expensive a CRT was because of this? It was like $5 on the price or something.
Well,
like.
I would have thought they would have had to have done in order to know how much to fine them, because obviously it's got to be based on the amount of losses that could potentially have been sustained.
Accounted for 50% to 70% of the screen, the alumina.
I mean, how do you come up with 313.4 million? That implies that it's been calculated, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I suppose so.
which says that EU money, as in money we paid for our taxes, have got some 18 people in an office going, Excel spreadsheet going, how much do you think the little bracket costs? Oh, $28. $28p. Oh, well, I think they were charging 68 pence for that. That's 40 pence per multiplied by.
Exactly.
Yeah. Something like that, James, yeah.
A free coffee, probably, as well.
Could be. Fixing the price of coffee. Now, let's not talk about Starbucks.
Hey.
Starbucks.
Hang on, that's token effort they were accused of.
You guys must have followed the Starbucks story. I mean, it's got nothing to do with tech, but that never stops us. $10 million they've agreed, or £10 million they've agreed to pay in tax that they don't have to, but they've got rid of paid lunches in the UK.
Do you think that smacks of something along the lines of, talking of boardroom scenes, that where they've said, how much do you think we can actually pay to actually get away with, how much the minimum we can get away with to restore our reputation.
Because they didn't have to pay the tax, but they just did anyway.
Have you not followed this story?
No.
Oh man, Amazon, Google, and Starbucks have created uproar in the UK because what they've done is they've set up firms in Luxembourg where they only pay 3% corporation tax. So every penny that they make in the UK, they have to pay a royalty to the Luxembourg firm for the use of the name Starbucks, Amazon, and Google. And it means that they pay all their corporation tax in Luxembourg and none of it in the UK. And the whole of the UK is up in arms over the fact that those three are, I mean, Google turned over something like 1.2 billion and paid 1.6 million in tax in the UK total. And Starbucks.
But it wasn't illegal.
No, it's perfectly legal.
It's immoral.
Yeah.
There's what's not immoral?
It's intelligent. It's brilliant.
Exactly.
Well, you could say
exactly
that.
Exactly, I asked.
It's only intelligent until you start paying your customers.
It can be both.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in this austerity times, there's a sense of social responsibility, and we all actually believe that companies should actually pay their way.
You've got to say, Starbucks made a couple of billion pounds in the UK and didn't pay a penny in corporation tax. Zero. Not a thing. Good on them. Bizarre.
Well, good on them, they can get away with it. But and when times are good, maybe, but when we're craving tax revenue, I think that's they do owe a certain moral, social responsibility to actually make sure that they pay something towards it in terms of corporation tax.
What's up with Luxembourg's tax code, too? I mean, seriously.
3% is cool, isn't it?
Well, clearly it's set up so that the companies get set up in Luxembourg, and then Luxembourg is to enjoy that tax revenue because you're gladly going to pay them. It's just like when people always go to Delaware to set up their corporations in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the UK or the EU might want to change its laws to make it much more attractive to be there.
The problem you have is you only have to be geographically in Europe in some respects. Because, I mean, Switzerland isn't part of, if I get it right, I don't think Switzerland is part of the EU, but they have business transactions, they have business bank accounts there, so they don't have to pay the kind of the taxes for that. It's clever, it's loopholes, but they can get away with it as long as they're not trying to serve anything to the public, and I think that's the mistake they made.
I mean, from what I understand, Luxembourg, you can damn near pee across it. But some in the chat room says, I'm in Luxembourg. I like Amazon having their Euro headquarters here. They employ 400 people and it's a proper office. But the thing is, if someone orders something from Amazon, they probably charge him a fortune in postage because it comes from the UK. There you go.
I thought they do ship quite a lot from abroad, though, don't they? If you look on your Amazon parcel, I have to go upstairs to look at the packaging. But they do ship quite a few bits and pieces. They have warehouses on the European continent. They probably have massive containers forming a line you could probably walk across to get to France.
Amazon, of course, did have the... they were making use of the loop, the VAT loophole by shipping from... Jersey, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's been... that loophole has been looked at. I don't think it's actually necessarily been closed, but Majesty's Revenue and Customs are certainly aware of the issues that that's creating.
If there's a tech company that likes a tax loophole, it's Amazon.
That is true.
100%.
Yeah.
But from a corporate
I don't know if you've heard of all of the controversies here where they were like fighting, they like moved their warehouse out of Texas because Texas took away their tax break, and they've done all these things to try to get a national sales tax put in place by Congress because they don't want to fight all of these battles in all these different states here. So Amazon really plays the tax game close. They want to pay as little as they can possibly get away with.
It's the most fun game in the world. It's who gets to keep the most money. I love this game.
This is the thing. When you're a global company, you're naturally going to levitate towards the countries where they have the lowest tax rates. It's human nature in terms of ensuring the biggest shareholder return, isn't it?
Bright Star in the chat room says, Google stashed their profits in Bermuda. How do the residents of California feel about that?
Oh.
Did you hear, by the way?
Go ahead, residents of California.
Absolutely.
I, as someone who has an LLC registered in Delaware, and then I do business in California, I have to pay California tax. California is good at this stuff. They're like, yeah, you can stash your stuff in Bermuda all you want. You have a presence here, we're going to tax you. We're going to figure out how to do it.
As long as you're a resident.
California's still broke.
Yeah, unless you're non-dom, you're going to get taxed, aren't you, Tom?
Yeah. Google may be better at this than me. I'm probably pretty sure they
maybe are. They've only got like I think maybe twice as many attorneys as you do.
Well, that's 2 times 0 is 0.
They've probably got better tax accountants as well, Tom.
Yeah.
Jason still sat there going, "Oh, green screen."
See, this only
the only tax accountant I know retired to do a tech show.
On the screen at once, amazing.
Well, I think we should put the power of
I have nothing on taxes.
Put the power of tax loopholes to the common man. I mean, I want to become a non-dom. So what I'll do is I'll swap houses with someone in another country, and that can be my main house. And I can only they can have this house, and therefore, effectively, I could register to. You know, I'm sure there's ways around this as a person, and I could probably get myself into a huge amount of trouble for
James
it.
James has the authorities
crowdsourcing startup for this, right?
Yeah.
It's funny you should say that, James, because with the amount of time I'm spending in the Emerald Isle, I'm beginning to think like that as well.
James, too.
Our local MP got into a lot of trouble for flipping, and that was only between Luton and Southampton, and nobody wants to.
James has people turn up at the door, and that's his stock phrase when they turn up. I'm not really me. I'm not really here. I'm a contingent of other European nation.
It's an empty vessel.
That's right.
That's an entirely different joke. Eric Schmidt has said that Microsoft is no longer one of the big four. Speaking, he said that he reckons that in terms of being a tech presence, Microsoft don't cut it no more. Thoughts?
The Economist agrees with him. The front page of The Economist last Friday was the big four sharks of the tech world, and it was Amazon, Facebook, Apple, and Google. No mention of Microsoft on the cover.
Mm. Would anyone debate that? Those are four pretty big names. However, Microsoft in the top five.
Oh, that's okay then. They've only been deposed by a company that has absolutely no substance whatsoever in terms of Facebook.
Well, Microsoft doesn't do a whole lot of moves, right? They're just like this giant, like, elephant that people are just somehow, they're not seeing it anymore. Like, they're just on every desktop. They're on tablets at this point. They're still working on the phones. People forget that the Xbox is super successful. They're just not making, like, these giant switches and moves like Amazon fighting taxes or Facebook changing policies or Google introducing, like, Project Glass. It's just that Microsoft moves in a much slower way that people somehow just completely forgot that they exist. I don't think they're out of the top.
They did the Zune, they did the Kin, they thought, ah, sod it.
It's like, we're just going to stay quiet over here for a little bit.
You we'll do it.
With tiles, just like this interface we have right now.
There you go.
Okay, I mean,
the Metro show.
As you and you may know, I have a lot of dealings with Microsoft, and I can tell you, I still think they're a major player.
I thought you were going to say they still threaten to beat me up around the corner and take away everything I own if I don't buy their products.
Well, they're a good company back there. I mean, look, HP, IBM, Cisco, these are all huge companies. Let's not forget Huawei, Samsung. I mean, there's lots of companies that are not listed. I think these are the big four in growth and hype. That maybe not what Eric Schmidt means, but that's what it seems to me when I'm looking at that cover of The Economist.
I agree with you there, Tom. The first thing that I thought about when I read that story was, hang on, these are the guys that deal in the software that runs nuclear power stations, till operating systems, mobile phones. You know, the prevalence of their operating system software is huge as a reach. Apple has got some really cool products out there, but they're certainly not taking the market share away from Microsoft in the PC field. And when it comes down to it, you look at the people that are doing the routing of data across the world, whether it be at the domestic level in the Netgear, come Citrix, come
Cisco-y
type element, or whether it's across networks where, you know, network cell providers, that kind of stuff. Surely that's where the real power is, even if it's not the brand name.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, out of the companies we've talked about, and I know I might have a natural tendency to lean this way, but I'd much rather be a Cisco rather than an Apple.
Apparently, Batwinch says that they run rides at Alton Towers, and Gouchum says that they run ATMs as well, which he discovered when he turned up and saw a BSOD at the machine he went to.
But I would say that that Microsoft is heading down to be an equivalent to IBM. IBM isn't a popular company. It's not kind of like an innovator by any means, but they make a huge amount of money, as you said, operating things that are the mainstays of. What he should have said, Eric Schmidt should have said, is they're not one of the top four cool companies.
Yes, right. that would have been definitely a better way of putting it. Maybe that's
almost,
what he meant.
Or
as
almost
well.
More from the consumer aspect. Even though yes. Microsoft has their kind of reach into the consumer world, they don't have as much mind share right now at this point as Google, Facebook, Apple, Amazon all have just among everyday consumers. Microsoft kind of isn't as much in that conversation as they used to be.
I think these
four are leading in sexy new ways, right? Yeah. Google is the new way of doing advertising. Apple is the mobile revolution with tablets and phones. Amazon is big data and retail. Like, you know, don't forget the S3 services and the EC2 services they provide. They have this sort of cloud computing. And Facebook is all about the social graph and that whole new data mining area. So these are all fun new things. They're not the backbones. They're not the reliable things, the networks that we're talking about, which are much, much safer places to be in.
I think the thing is with Microsoft, they are becoming the new IBM, but I think they are also trying to make sure that they don't make the same mistakes that IBM made in the 80s. And that's why they're keeping their toe in the consumer element as well, so that they can, you know, they've actually got presence there as well, and they're more likely to survive on just more than just the business aspect.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're trying to avoid becoming the solutions company. Although IBM has been very successful at that pivot, I think Microsoft's hoping that they can make that still be a huge part of their business and the ground of their business, that enterprise section, but also continue to play in the consumer space and not have to exit it the way IBM did.
So here's the interesting thing. We've all sat there and we've all agreed that these are the cool companies, not necessarily the companies of substance or direction or control. And chat room, join in here. Please throw out any names that you think. Who are the companies that control us as individuals? If these are only the glitter companies, the icing on the cake companies.
Well, I think the most significant one in there is Cisco, because they control the internet. Everybody forgets about them. They're the ones that actually make all the connectivity work. Okay, you might have the Apple, and you might have the Microsoft that actually put the operating system on your desktop. But the people that actually make everything hang together and work and talk to each other, that's Cisco.
I knew I shouldn't have asked the chat room. Huawei, absolutely. The chat room's come out with Exxon, all ISPs, Ford, Twitter, Lockheed Martin, Mr. Whippy, and Pizza Hut.
Well, Lockheed Martin allows us to exist. That's plus, you know. They don't constantly try to kill us, so good on them.
They're not flying planes at us.
No, you'd be surprised what Lockheed Martin are into. I do work for a firm that manufacture machines that sort things, and all of the software for them is Lockheed Martin-based. That might not be as stupid as it sounds. I promise you.
Ford get in there.
Well, exactly.
I'm trying to remember. What's the name of that? Isn't there a company? I wish I could remember it. Very, very low profile. But they represent, must be, 20, 30% of all the food creation delivery in the world. I can't remember what they're called now. Really low. You barely have heard of them. But they are the food factory for the world. Can anyone remember the name of that company?
Well, if you go through the Unilevers.
Cargill.
Unilever, they're another one who might have huge reach.
Del Monte. He's a yes.
Well, Smith, Klein, Beecham and those kind of people as well. The Glaxos and those kind of pharmaceuticals. Nestle are huge, yeah, those kind of people.
I do want to say, though, that of these four that were touted, there's substance to at least two or three of them. I mean, Amazon has a very substantive retail business and a very substantive cloud computing business. Google is in, you know, I mean, that they're incredibly solid as far as, as search and advertising. And Apple's stock price, I think, is warranted as high as it is and as much as it's been crashing lately because of the mobile devices that they have. That may not be quite as substantive as the other two, but it's a solid success in consumer electronics. It's Facebook is the one that I look at and I think, your stock price falling is justified, because I'm still not sure what you're actually selling there.
Yeah, I've always thought that the thing with Facebook is that I don't understand where they're going to monetize that in a really big way. And I've always been skeptical about that Facebook model in the same way that I am with Twitter. I just don't see the big money-making opportunity that Google have found with their search services that they offer from these companies.
Chatroom still saying Del Monte. Meals on Wheels.
It's a Chiquita.
Sunday Sport.
The man from Del Monte.
Anyone that makes drugs. Archer Daniels Midland. I've never heard of them, but they're probably going to.
Oh, yeah, they're in the Midwest here in the United States. They make a lot of textured soy protein, among other things.
Have they got a death squad that turn up at your door, and if you say bad things, they like Apple Death Squad? Yeah. No. an article by Glenda Cooper has suggested that we are becoming an anti-social world thanks to the social network. The suggestion is that use of social networks has made us more antisocial rather than more social. I've got to disagree with that. I really have, because I the only friends I've got in the world are on Twitter.
I disagree with you disagreeing.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
I agree with this.
No friends.
Go ahead, Ayaz. Go on. Say something sensible.
Far too many people, we go out to a bar, and everybody pulls out their phone because they have to go to Untap and tell you what you're drinking. Then they have to tweet that. Then they have to put it on Facebook. Then they have to path it. Then they have to take an Instagram. And so 15 minutes later, you're finally having a conversation with somebody because they need to put this up. It's like there are actually people in the space. Why not talk to these people? So the thing is, it's not just that maybe at your home computer, but it's the mobile aspect that people constantly want to share with people who aren't there, which I think is a little strange. Actually socialize with the people who are there. Maybe this is my experience with nerdy friends at Twit, because we're all a bunch of nerds here.
There is this thing where you can actually end up living your life through a lens, can't you? I mean, the first thing you do whenever something interesting happens, grab your smartphone and take a photo of it, rather than actually talking to the person next to you and discussing what's going on. It's like, capture the moment, quick! Otherwise, I'll forget it.
You see this beautiful view and you pull out your camera and you're like, I can see it better than the lens. I have a higher res in here than the megapixels on this crappy phone. Why am I looking through this little device?
I had that exact same situation happen yesterday. And when I looked at the pictures after the event and I'd missed it, the pictures were nowhere near as good as I actually saw it when I took the picture, which is, I thought, I really missed that.
Yeah, but I mean, I shoot with a
£6,000
camera, but it doesn't capture the sunsets I see any better. The problem is worse.
The problem is, though, is that if I go somewhere with my family and we have a brilliant time, we've shared it within four people. If you have a network of 250, 500 people, I mean, you know, that's not, these days, that's not unexpected, of people you've known for years. If you feel almost like the journalistic urge to share the evidence, not showing off, but share that moment with them. And that temptation, because of the novelty of it, is really difficult to resist. It's so difficult. And to the extent where people are taking, and I'm still not sure I can understand it, why people take photos of food. I cannot understand it.
Well, the chat room's starting to give you a bit of stick here, mate. So sorry, Ayaz. Were you saying something? Because they were too busy tweeting. That was Coatmaker.
They were tweeting, and then they wrote it in the chat room to share that extra. Thank you.
There you go. Coatmaker. And then they listened to what you were saying.
I think you guys are right. All this new technology, I used to sit around the family room with the piano, and then that television came, and we all stopped talking to each other and watched television. And the newspaper, all the breakfast conversations have gone away since the tabloid newspaper showed up in the 1800s. I mean, it's ruining humanity, and I hope all technology. Technology
so
just goes away
back then, before America was invented.
That's right. That's why I'm totally advocating tossing all that out and having a fire pit in the middle of your room and then bring people into it. No, I mean, the thing is, it's still new. And the thing is, it's so seamless at this point how easy it is to share. It used to be pretty difficult. You have to attach a file to this thing and then post it to your blog or something. People didn't do that. Now it's like on Twitter, Instagram, everything you want, super fast.
So they're
super
being
easy.
Social is what you're saying.
Sorry, say that again?
They're being social.
They're being social with people who aren't there.
And yeah, you prefer that they be social with you because you are there.
Well, why not?
See,
That's not how you do it nowadays. Nowadays, you're in a perfectly enjoyable situation, and the entire time, all you want to do is look at your device and let everybody know how perfect your situation is. Even though you're not actually enjoying it. I think there's definitely something to this article. I find it in my life all the time where I happen to be enjoying where I am, and for some reason I need to like distract myself from it just to take a photo that I know full well is never going to do it justice. Or like we were saying earlier, taking video of something that's right in front of you, you end up spending the entire time looking through that lens and not actually soaking it in through your eyeballs and enjoying it for what it is. I think there's a big difference now as far as my enjoyment of particular situations or particular company, in some situations anyways, because of that distraction. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
But is it antisocial? I think that's my problem with this is we are behaving differently with new technologies because we have new technologies. Absolutely. But the idea that it somehow makes us antisocial, I don't see that. It may be rude. We may have not figured out the etiquette of situations, but that same video that you took, you may all gather around a phone or a laptop later and look at it, and that's suddenly very social. So yeah. I think it's easy to just say get off my lawn with this sort of stuff. It's not that simple.
Did you just take a picture of this show so that you could tweet out that you were on this show, dude?
I might be. I wrote, look, I'm doing something online and I'm tweeting it with an iPad, which makes it even more ridiculous.
Well, if I'd known, I would have done duck face.
Now we have a thing. I don't do Twitter ever do meetups? You know, when you guys go, okay, well, so we do a thing each year called The Bash, and it's like, if you listen to BTN, come along, drink some beer. Last year, we were sponsored by TechSmith, and we had a fabulous day, big pig roast, piles of beer paid for, and 50 people in my back garden. This year, I think we're going to be even bigger than that, but there's people turning up at my front door who I've never, ever seen face-to-face in my life before. And yet when they ring the doorbell, I open the door, there's a handshake. How you doing, buddy? There's no pleased to meet you. It's, how's it going? You know, and these are, this is going to make me sound like a real sad bastard, but some of these people are my friends, and I've never met them before in my entire life, and Twitter has given me that. There's a guy out in the Philippines who does the voice of the NBA out there, a guy called Carl Swagger. I've never seen this guy in my life, but I would class him as someone I would let babysit my children. You know, I know him that well through Twitter, through Facebook. And I can't see that as antisocial. The world, the pen pal world. You remember pen pals in the 70s? Pen pal world is huge now.
But yeah, I mean, I agree.
Because everybody's a pen pal with everybody.
Well, I know you five for a start.
Yeah, no, it's true. The perception of what is being social has completely changed with the new technology. And I completely agree with what you're saying, Ewan. So many people even like when you take a look at a social network like Facebook, love it or hate it, whatever, it tends to be a place where you end up reconnecting with people that maybe you knew 20 years ago at school or whatever the case is.
Which is great.
In the old paradigm, I never would see them if I didn't go to some sort of class reunion and bump into them and see them once and in 2 minutes get some sort of indication or rundown as far as what's been up the last 20 years. Now I get a little bit of insight into it. Sometimes I don't want it, but sometimes it's just a different type of social that you don't get otherwise. You wouldn't get otherwise.
I'd add to that. There's an extra thing where you can find people you're like-minded within similar interests to you on the likes of Twitter. And you would not, you because you're so geographically separate, the only way you can communicate is really through the internet. And the likelihood of them being in your local area is so much more. It's a real pain in the ass to go and visit people who you know on a regular basis. And therefore, sometimes it's the easiest thing to do is sit in front of your computer and communicate with them there.
Which is exactly what we're doing now. And we're all over the world.
Yes.
Span the globe. The British Tech Network spans the globe. The sun never sets on British Tech. Yay! There we go.
But I think the message here, Ewan, is that, you know, this all this stuff, and I'm going to call it stuff because it's in so many different forms. I don't think you can just call it social media. Actually, shrinks the world. I mean, we're doing a television show, and we're in three different countries.
Yes.
And all those annoyances that I, as a Jason and everybody have been mentioning are real annoyances. And I think that's just because it's new stuff. You know, we're still learning how to properly use it. But I don't think it ultimately has a negative effect. It's just those growing pains.
My wife gets really pissed off at me if we go over to the local curry house, because I always take a picture of the naan and tweet it out saying, does your naan look as good as this on a Friday night? And everyone goes, no, it doesn't look as good as this. I'm in the best curry house in the world and I know it. And there is a certain amount of showing off with that. And I've got the best curry house in the world that's opposite my house. When you guys come over, you'll find it. It's beautiful. But
can I just make a point, guys?
Oh, go on.
Curtis B in the chat room just reminded me of a point. If you include the chat room, how many countries are we in? And the chat room is part of that technology as much as the fact that us six are actually broadcasting this show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most definitely. Curtis also, Coatmaker made a point. Pen pal, is that like a friend? How do I do like on pen pal?
Big thumbs up through the post.
Now, there's a big thing going on at the moment where the EU are debating, the UN are debating about regulatory control of the internet. And the EU is trying to reassure people that it's not going to be a significant issue. One of the things that came out on Wired this week, which was pretty interesting, was a map of the internet and how likely you are to be cut off from it. Now, if you look at the image that I'm showing here, anything that's dark green has got a severe risk of being cut off at the will of anyone that fancies it. Anyone that's in a light green colour is fairly resistant to being cut off. I mean, the internet, there's a huge UN discussion at the moment about the regulatory necessity of the internet, and I find that an immense discussion that, you know, we haven't got enough time to finish off here. But if you're in the darker green patches where your internet existence is dependent on the other nations around you, particularly the US, is the regulation of the internet really of any kind of significance to you, or is they're just going to take it away if they feel like it?
Well, if you think about the fact that the DNS, the top level DNS servers are mostly based in the US, we're all dependent on the US.
So the US guys are sitting there going, well, we don't have to worry then.
Well, in some respects, we're dependent on the US, but also a lot of the country. If the US disappeared off the internet, which is almost impossible anyway because of the sheer number of connections, it's all to do with the quantity of connectivity. It's the number of roads to get into the country. If you block that road, you can stop things from getting in there. It's almost unthinkable that the US would ever have that problem because of the number of connections they've got to other countries. And in some respects, it's the political situation in those countries that, I mean, Afghanistan is a really interesting example that was cited in the article. Because so many countries are involved in Afghanistan now, they have made those connections, which is going to make it very difficult to break. It's interesting, Zombie6 in the chat room is in Slovenia, which is light green. That's quite frightening to think your country could be just, all it would take is either through political means or through terrorism for your internet to be completely cut off. That's businesses going down the pan effectively.
I mean, there is a huge amount of investment in internet for development for companies. And we've seen in the last 2 years, good stories of bad stories of ships, anchors dragging up the wire, the tube that connected all of these people to the internet. And that's it. It's gone, severed. There is nothing.
So ain't just removing them from DNS. That is, yeah. Physical stuff. A zombie attack, as Batwench suggested.
You disappear.
Well, that was the whole lie with Syria, where Syria said, oh, there was a cut line, and that's why the internet has had problems. Yeah. And people pointed out, well, there's three underground and one overground coming from four different directions. You don't just accidentally snip a line and Syria goes off the internet. And I think the whole hullabaloo over the International Telecommunications Union renegotiating the 1988 Treaty on Telecom is because people are afraid of any inching progress towards regulation of the internet. And I am too. I'm fine with that. But it is causing a little unnecessary fear. I mean, what they're negotiating is important. You know, the standards of 1988 aren't good for the standards of 2012. And it's a treaty. So countries are going to ignore it or not ratify it or ratify it as they see fit. It's not like the ITU can just seize control of the internet. The internet's too big and too diffuse for that. So on the one hand, I don't think that a lot of negative is going to come out of this. But on the other hand, we're not going to get a lot of positive out of it either. Even if we passed in this treaty that you can't censor your own internet, China's going to still do it. Iran's still going to do it because they can.
There is a very important distinction to be made of the difference between the internet and the web. The web is the content, the stuff that is picked up through DNS resolution, through the stuff, the application layer stuff that's been bolted onto this IP network, which is routed and sent in so many diffuse ways because of this whole border gateway protocol, that if they wanted to put another internet on top of it, it is possible to do. Another web on top of it, it is possible to do so. You just look up the IP addresses in different ways. If you're trying to regulate the number of IP addresses and how those IP addresses contact each other, that is quite a serious political rather than a practical. You know, it's got little to do with the applications that run on it. It's the political might of being able to control the addresses and the numbers to which IP addresses can connect. And that goes well beyond the web experience. That goes to businesses, to communications, to all the stuff that goes through IP.
I mean, the intellectual property element of that discussion is the big part as far as the US is concerned, because where they believe intellectual property has been infringed as IP, their ability to cut off sites in remote locations is huge, without judicial process, without judicial oversight.
Well, there's two different types of IP, aren't there? There's IP addresses and intellectual property. Exactly. Intellectual property addresses. Now, that's interesting. I'll come with IPv6, I suppose.
IPv12. Well, and that's the thing, right? That deep packet inspection proposal that was passed by a different committee but is being considered by the ITU is more dangerous if it were to be adopted, because it would build deep packet inspection into the routers, potentially. In other words, it could make it so that Cisco couldn't make a router that didn't have the capability for deep packet inspection built into it. That's absolutely frightening. But the thing is, the United States, Europe, are not going to ratify a treaty that contains that. And in fact, it's one of the few times you've ever seen unanimity in the U.S. Congress. They passed a resolution saying we will not cede any control over administration of domain names, et cetera, to the ITU. So nothing like that is likely to happen out of this. It's frightening that they're even talking about it.
It is a bit of a stalemate situation, though, isn't it? Because everybody has their own kind of cards that they're playing, and they don't want to give up anything. And therefore, it's like no movement actually makes stability for everybody. As soon as the first person makes that crazy move, and I'm not talking about the Ukrainians, because there is a massive hacker community out there. If anybody's going to overthrow the developing Eastern Bloc economies, it's going to be them, or even China. China has got a massive number of IP addresses and a huge amount of stuff that we don't know what's going on in there. All it takes is one of the cards to fall over, and it will all go horribly wrong. It's just occurred to me that what they were saying is there was this legislation about, as you say, potentially putting deep packet inspection into the processes of routers. But I was led to understand that I thought there was a move to put some kind of security protocols into CPUs of PCs at one point, was there not?
As part of the ITU thing or just other stuff?
Oh, in other stuff. There was this kind of regulation to make
that's
sure you couldn't do stuff you weren't allowed to do.
Stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all that is, if it doesn't come to the public perception, people don't know about it, it can get slipped in without anybody knowing. And that's the other frightening thing.
Well, that was
this kind of stuff just pushes things like mesh networks to get developed, and the faster the better. I mean, the one saving grace about all this technology is there's always a hacker figuring out how to do it in a way that can't be tracked or changed.
Yep. God bless them. God bless you if you're out there.
Hackers, you're welcome here. This podcast and all the others on the network are brought to you by UK2.net. They're absolutely fantastic. We've had a relationship with them now for 3 years. It's going to continue for another 2 years. And they pick up all the bandwidth. And since we started doing this podcast, we've gone from about 10 people listening to phenomenally huge amount of people listening. We did we regularly do 60 terabytes a month, and thanks to UK2, we don't have to pay anything for that. It's 450 quid's worth of bandwidth a month that they pick up. All we're asking in return is that because they support us, you support them, plain and simple. Go to our website, britishtechnetwork.com, click on the sponsors link and you'll see a UK2 logo. Click on that and that'll take you through to their site. Buy whatever services that you want. And then if you look back at the sponsors page, there's a whole pile of discount codes. You get 20% off domain names. You'll get your first month free on VPS and VPN, those kind of things. There's loads and loads of money to be saved if you go with UK2. The prices are pretty keen to begin with anyway, but British Tech listeners do get a real bonus as well as. And every time you buy something from them, you're keeping us afloat, because if they walked away from this network, that'd be it. We'd just close down tomorrow, plain and simple. We cannot afford the bandwidth that we consume transmitting all the shows out to you. And we've got a dozen shows out there publishing an article once a week at least. Please support UK2 because they support us and we love them to bits. Thank you, Craig. If you've got any problems, see Craig though, not me. Right, we do a thing on here, chaps, called the cool thing, which is just basically you picking something that you think's really cool to do with tech from the week. It could be a YouTube video, it could be an app, it could be anything you damn well like. So I'm sure you've got something, but just to give you the time to think of something, because I didn't really mention this, did I, in the email, we'll start with James and Sarah. James, have you got a cool thing?
I've got a couple of little bits and pieces that I would like to discuss. The first is interesting, we were talking about the way that the internet and the web's working. Twitter stopped Instagram from being able to find followers, so you could find Instagram contacts through who you followed on Twitter, which I thought was a pretty nasty move. Instagram have now, I don't know whether it's in retaliation or just generally, stopped you from being able to share photos you've taken through Instagram of your food on Twitter. So it's kind of tit for tat thing, or twit for twat. Anyway.
Why food?
It's always bloody food on Instagram. Food. My wife says, are you taking another beige photo?
Has she got an algorithm for spotting food then?
No, Instagram. If you scroll down Instagram, every five photos, it'll be someone's lunch, somebody's coffee. I don't know. Anyway, notice all posting of photos to Twitter from Instagram has stopped. However, the whole point of what I was trying to say is there is something called ifttt.com, which basically stands for if this, then that. And what you can do is you can have social media recipes that if you post something to Twitter, it can also do the, you know, post something. So it joins together algorithmically your social networks. And it's amazing how many internet networks it uses, it has connections with. All I've done is make it so if I put hashtag of Twitter on the end of my Instagram, it posts it to Twitter. So it's a very simple one to start off with. But I think that's a really nice idea that joins things together that would not otherwise be joined.
SF Drummer in the chat room says, I like taking artso photos of my coffee. What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nice crema. The other one is the clever trick of the week. I'll post it in the chat room. Did you know it's possible to open a bottle of wine with a shoe? If you haven't got a corkscrew.
I've done it with a piece of string and a knife.
Oh, blimey, that sounds really dangerous. Basically, this video that I've posted in the chat room, we'll stick it in the show notes. If you stick the bottom of the bottle of wine in your shoe, hold the top and smash it against the wall, the cork will come out.
Weird.
I could have done with that the other night.
And I'm the one with the unsafe method.
It's...
smash the top of the bottle as well, wouldn't it, James?
No, because if you hold the top of the bottle, because of the structural integrity of the cylinder, the bottle won't smash. And it's amazing how much the glass in these bottles is designed to be really tough. I dropped a bottle of beer off a shelf onto a hard floor, and it was fine. It just bounced. In fact, two fell. One of them, I thought beer all over the place. I thought it hasn't smashed, hasn't it? No, it popped the lid off. So actually, there you go. If you need, it's a little bit late for you, Sarah, but that's an interesting little trick. you didn't hear it from me, and I'm taking no responsibility for it.
I want a demonstration.
Yes.
Well, the YouTube video demonstrates it very, very adequately.
Oh, okay, cool.
We're going to come to Ayaz next for his, because he's put it in the dock, and I know he's got one. And I've got to say, Ayaz, before you even start, mate, seconded.
Okay.
Your cool thing is...
I'm going to talk about X marks. I've been using it a lot now. I use Google Chrome and it's got sync for bookmarks and everything. But for the longest time, Chrome didn't have a nice way to sort your bookmarks. It was a mess. I've been using X marks. And one of the things I was doing this week, because I just was like, what is wrong with my bookmarks? I didn't realize that X mark will actually look for duplicates and remove that. I went from 1,700 bookmarks to like 800 because I had so many duplicates. Because after the years and years of import from switching browsers to browsers to browsers, I just had this huge list of bookmarks I'd never used. I'm like, this cleaned it up really nicely. So I'm going to suggest using Xmarks if you haven't used it. It's on Safari, it's on Firefox, it's on Chrome. And on top of that, it'll sync them all across those. So if you use lots of different browsers at the same time, like I do, it's really helpful.
Xmark started on Firefox, didn't it? Firefox, and then it went away from Firefox and then came back. It stopped working for a while, which is why I moved away from it, but it is absolutely brilliant. Didn't they have a funding issue as well?
I think LastPass wound up buying them, so it's safe for now.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic application. Great pick, mate. Wonderful. Sarah, what have you got for us, Mrs.?
Mine is actually a cool thingy I've picked before, but I picked it this week because it's really helped me with some issues I've had. I'm in Ireland, and broadband here is not quite as good as it should be.
We noticed.
And this particular week, I've had lots of issues, lots of dropouts and stuff like that, which has really hindered me working from here. And I have to say, I've mentioned this before, it's called the ICSI Netalyzer from Berkeley University. And it doesn't just, you know, look at your internet connection, tell you what the speed is. It gives you all sorts of useful information. I mean, one that I picked up, which was really good, was telling me that my ISP DNS server is slow to look up names. Ah, right, okay, well, I'll use a different DNS servers, things like that. And, it, you know, all sorts of reachability tests and, you know, HTTP tests. Whoops.
Too much wine, girl. Too much wine by far.
Yeah, well, I've only had one glass.
Yeah, righto.
But, as I say, I wanted to pick it this week because it had been very, very helpful.
Excellent. Good pick.
Thank you.
Who's next? Jason. Jason, what have you got for us?
Well, I mean, I live a lot of my online life on my Android device, and actually a really cool app was just released this morning called Snapseed. And if you've been on iOS with the iPhone or iPad or whatever, I know Snapseed has been on the iOS platform for a while for $4.99. I think they just reduced that to free on iOS, but they also released their Android version of it. Google acquired Nix Software in September and basically came up with this Android version, and I gotta say it's just a great kind of photo editing app for the Android platform. It's got a really cool interface, really interesting ways to kind of manipulate the image and everything. And one thing I found kind of interesting even further, and this, I mean, obviously it's in Google's best interest to do this, there's a single click share to Google Plus directly in any Android app. For the most part, that you could do things like this, you can share and then it brings up a list of all the different services to share to. This app pretty much shares directly to Google Plus. You can also share it to other places, but it's interesting to see Google kind of roping it directly to their service. It's incredibly easy, so I'm pretty sure if you're on Google Plus, you're going to see a lot more of these popping up into your stream pretty quickly. But it's a great app, Snapseed, and it's free.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of people say Snapseed's good, and the integration with the services for getting your what's the Google service for pictures? Picasa. Getting your stuff out there has got to be the crucial part. Mm-hmm. If you want to show it, you've got to have something that will upload direct.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Tomo, what have you got for us, pal?
Some people out there might know this, but I'm moving to Los Angeles from San Francisco. My wife got a job down there with YouTube, so we've got to move. And one of the things when you move, I'm sure it's the same the world over, you got to fill out all these freaking forms, all, you know, applications and leases and stuff like that. And people email them to you. And then, you know, you got to print them out and then fill them out and then scan them back in. Forget that. Lifehacker tipped me off to fillanypdf.com. And they've tested it out. They say it's pretty safe and secure and allows you on any browser, anywhere, to upload a PDF. You can either type or draw on it. So you can sign. You can also, like, fill out forms and then save it back to your hard drive and be able to attach it to an email and send it in. It's a lifesaver in filling stuff out. So if you're going through a lot of paperwork.
Yeah, that's a winner already.
Absolutely.
You know, you go to one of them and goes, yeah, I'm buying that now.
Yeah.
It's free.
Definitely. Free.
Cool.
Yeah, I will definitely buy it. Free.
Yeah.
Buy it for free. Fillanypdf.com.
Do you have to actually do the PDF on their site, Tom?
You upload the PDF to their, that's the catch, right? You're uploading the PDF to them, so you have to trust them. It is HTTPS, and Lifehackers checked it out, and they say they feel it's pretty secure. Obviously, if you've got really sensitive information that you don't want any chance of falling in anyone else's hands, you might not want to do this. But just for your run-a-day stuff where you just got to sign something, it works really well.
Oh.
Excellent. My pick, and you're not going to get this in the US unless you've got a proxy tunnel, of course, is the iPlayer for radio application for iOS. That's what it looks like normally, and I've got green screen on, so that's why that some of that's disappearing. Unfortunately, it goes three through. There's James's eye. Look, there we go. And it's great. You just scan through all of your applications on a little scroll wheel here that goes through each of the channels that BBC offers on the radio. But what's kind of cool is normally if you turn an application landscape, what happens is it just gives you an landscape version of that. But actually, if you turn this application landscape, what it does is give you the live schedule for the BBC radio for the day, which is pretty cool. Take it into a completely different realm. And based on the fact that you've got free 3G on the 3 network, I sit and play this in the van and that's it. I'm listening to the radio when I want, and I'm also doing catch-up on the radio whenever I want, and it's all free. It's all part of my package. I don't need to worry about being connected to the net via a hub or anything like that.
Mr. Rankin.
What? Go on. iPlayer Radio is my pick.
I have to say, when I saw that in the chat room, I thought, you jammy bugger. I've been waiting for this to arrive on Android, and they still haven't done it. And it's the one app. I'd rather have that rather than the standard.
Life's a bitch, Sarah. What can I say?
But I thought, how can you include something that's only available on iOS?
Speaking from my ivory tower, I have to say, I really don't give a toss.
And in the UK.
And, but the good thing is...
Well put.
If you've got a VPN for your iOS device and you're in the States, then you can get that. You can still steal it. There you go. It won't worry at all. But
when you're using the VPN for security at the coffee shop and you accidentally connect to a UK server, it might accidentally work, is what you're saying.
Yeah, of course.
No, I'm talking about stealing it.
He's not beating around the bush.
Right.
Yeah, just call it,
Let's call it what it is.
Call it what it is. Exactly. Exactly. That's twice
those
you've done me tonight.
Paying for a BBC license fee.
Tom, Tom, in the document it says cool things, and you list what you've got. Tom's listed a number. Is that your phone number, mate, or something?
I
don't think it actually relates to anything that
I didn't write that.
You didn't write
that.
Weird. Okay.
I don't know what that is.
James wrote that, apparently. There we go. It's
gone. Because up there, you see, been doing a lot of forms of my move, and then I've got fillinapdf.com. I don't know.
There we go.
Who made
We're in now. I've done that. I've done it.
Fill in any Google documents.com.
Because I already had it up there for Ewan's.
How odd.
It's not like this show to be technically inept.
Also, my phone. No, it was not my phone.
As it is.
Fantastic link up this evening. Thank you ever so much to the TNT crew for coming over here. And same Sarah couldn't make it as well as, but she's hobnobbing with the French, which means that if she's with the French, I couldn't give a stuff because I don't like the French much. Give me the Welsh any day over the French. Where can we get a hold of you? James, where are you, sir?
Two very quick things. The first thing is I've started using Google Plus again. One of the things I was absolutely desperate for was right at the beginning of Google Plus, I would add anybody who added me to their circles, I'd add them to my circles. And as a consequence, there were these people who would just like post incessantly 20,000 times a day of their stuff, be it basically stuff they'd nicked from other places and photos and stuff. And I couldn't, I wanted to filter those out. But there's a really nice little thing where you can get a circle. For example, I've got a circle called Noisy for people who post huge amounts of stuff today. And you can just drag the little slider and you can only get a couple of or no posts from them, which is really useful. So I've started using it a little bit more now. It's a really good way to be able to share stuff with people you know, you respect. For example, most of the people who are on the British Tech Network are on Google Plus, and I will share and look for things that are associated with it, and I know the audience is interested in what I'm doing. So you can find me on Google Plus. I don't know how. just link me. I'm linked to most of the people on here, and I'm on Twitter as SitsG. And the second thing I want to say is the chat room has been absolutely splendid tonight. Huge number of people there, and some really interesting and humorous.
Yeah, and I mean, I thank you guys for coming over. But to be honest, the chat room's come over as well, and they've been brilliant. Thank you ever so much. Do see you next week, 8 o'clock. No, we're Friday. We're Friday next week, not Thursday. But 8 o'clock on Friday
Thursday.
Next week. But it's normally Thursday. Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Ayaz, where can we get you, pal? We should be able to get you a few extra followers on Twitter, maybe if you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's at Ayaz, IYAZ. So if you want to see what I'm doing, I'm going to plug. Obviously, tech news today, twit.tv/TNT. But my new show, which I'm enjoying the heck out of, is called Know How. It's on twit.tv/KH. And we actually did an episode about if this, then that. We had some pretty cool some triggers to set up some emails, some pretty cool things. So if you ever wanted to know how to do anything with technology, I definitely suggest checking out that show.
Now, two things, Ayaz. Firstly, yes. Apparently you like Security Now as well. And secondly, you were drunk.
I was drunk what time?
Well, I don't know.
All day? I don't know.
I was watching a thing today. Leo was talking to Steve Gibson. He said that you were drunk and you said you love Security Now.
That's probably true.
Yeah. See, normally you love your best mate when you're drunk. I really love you, mate.
I profess my love for podcasts when inebriated. It's true.
That's antisocial, dude. That's antisocial right there. I really love podcasts. Steve Gibson, I love you.
Well, actually, it is antisocial when I'm working on my computer all day trying to make it secure. It takes forever, man.
Yeah.
You know, Steve saying, like, do all this stuff. It doesn't happen to everybody, mate.
Trying to be secure.
Just watch those links you click, mate, and avoid the porn. Stay away from the porn.
Oh, come on.
All right, jeez. Okay. No, don't. Sarah, where are you, Mrs.?
I have to say I'm a big Security Now fan as well, and I have to say that the early episodes of Security Now, great for learning all about networking. Teach you all the stuff about TCP/IP. If you're a geek interested in that stuff, recommend listening to it. You can get a hold of me at Sarah Jane UK on Twitter and just about on everything else as well, including Google+, Facebook, and on my website as well.
Excellent. Thank you, Mrs. Jason, where are you, sir?
Right now I'm in Shannon Morse's office, but you can find me at about.me/Jason Howell or at Jason Howell on Twitter. And I mean, what to plug other than TNT, the show that I produce? I also do host and produce a show about Android called All About Android, twit.tv/AAA. And you and James, Sarah, thank you so much for inviting us all on. This has been a lot of fun.
Good. I hope you come back.
Yeah, great to again.
Tom's obviously got to go because he's cut his video. So where are you, Tom?
Oh, really? You know, I got disconnected right when you insulted the French, and I thought that was some kind of censorship.
Do you want me to do it again?
There we go.
I gladly do it. The best story of the week was the French sperm count is down.
I heard about that. So sad. For the French, or maybe not.
My heart bled.
I was going to say, it's only going to bring it down to the rest of the world, isn't it?
I'm playing Assassin's Creed 3 at the moment, and with the US and the French together against the Blighty lot, I'm the French. There we go. Where are you, Tomo?
I'm on Twitter. I'm Ace Detect, which is just a rubbish name. So just find me at TomMerritt.com. It's 2 R's, 2 T's in Merritt. And of course, Tech News Today, every day, 10 a.m. Pacific time. I believe that's 6 p.m.? Or 1800 GMT?
6 p.m., 1800 GMT.
Yeah,
absolutely.
If I have that right. At live.twit.tv. And of course, you can get it on demand to subscribe to the podcast, twit.tv/TNT. Always a pleasure having you and on there like we did today. And this crossover thing was fun. This was a really good time.
This was great.
Cool.
I've got to say, I've got a whole series of podcasts that I listen to. And I drive around. And I got a limited amount of time that I can listen to podcasts. I try and review all the ones that go out on our network. But the only one that's off the network that I never fail to miss is TNT. And that's not me just saying that because you guys are coming down the crossover and all that kind of stuff. And
it's because you're drunk.
No, it's because I'm not drunk. It's because I actually do enjoy it.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Whether you're drunk or not, I appreciate it.
I'm not drunk. Am I coming across as drunk?
No.
Really?
Not at all. But you're professing love for podcasts, I could only assume.
That happens when you get drunk, I hear.
I have to say, Tom.
Argentinian Malbec, 15%. Beautiful. Go on, Tom.
As you guys know, I'm a big Twit fan as well, but I've warmed, and I listen to a lot of stuff that Leo does, but I've really warmed to you guys. That you do a great job.
Oh, thanks. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Are we off air yet? Can I say TNT's crap? No? No.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about time.
Sometimes.
Do the French make overpriced wines? Absolutely, Mark, and they all taste like crap. Don't buy French wine.
Yeah.
Buy Argentinian or Chilean.
Mine's Californian.
The Californian's pretty good, but we don't get so much over the good stuff here.
Can you judge the quality of a wine as to whether, if it's got a screw cap, is it still crap?
No.
That's not a deciding factor.
They reckon it's this bit at the bottom. How far your thumb goes in. No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Because to produce a bottle that allows your thumb to go in up to the knuckle joint is expensive. So there you go. That's supposedly the test.
So basically, if it smashes when you're opening it up with a shoe, not good point.
It's not good.
I tend to find tasting is a good example.
Yes.
But there
it's
we go.
A lot more fun.
Yeah. That kind of work.
You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We're also British Tech on Twitter, as well as we've got a Facebook page and we've got a whole pile of other stuff. And we shoot the breeze on tech most weeks. We've got some great shows at the moment. And we've been nominated for the European Podcast Awards. Please, 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 if you get an opportunity, go to britishtechnetwork.com. And on there, it says vote for BTN. And there's six of our podcasts. Six of them have been nominated for awards this year. We only had three last year. And we finished third with the Max Show, which was fantastic. But please, click on all of our podcasts and vote for them. If you close your browser down and open it up again, you can vote again as well, because they don't do IP tracking.
We just don't want to be last with this one. That's all I'm after.
Well, we finished third last year. And
big show to win.
Yeah, and I think that was due to the fact that I spent roughly 47 hours sitting, clicking and closing and clicking and closing and clicking and closing. But please vote for us. We would love your vote. Thank you very much. And it would mean immense amounts to us to be European Podcast of the Year. And also, we'd be unbearable afterwards if we actually won it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Ewan, before you go,
yes,
it's December now. Why the still face fungus?
Because I started growing this for November. Do you guys have got November in the States, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right, okay. So I started growing this, and last year I grew a moustache, and it just looked like I hadn't washed my face, because I'm not very good at growing facial hair. So this year I started 2 weeks early, and I grew the whole beard thing as well as.
Descent beard.
I like that.
Beard in inverted commas. All right, fair enough. Sorry, mate, I'm using beard and Tom. I don't grow facial hair particularly well, but I've got to the stage
beard
now.
For years for me now.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, people have said, that suits you. The wife hates it, but why do I care what my wife thinks?
My wife liked mine. I wasn't sure she would.
No.
I'm with the wife, Ewan. I don't like facial hair either.
No, unfortunately, I don't kiss you much. So there we go. I like it, and I'm going to keep it for a while, so it'll go at some point. It'll go. If you'd like to suggest a name for the title for this show, then send it to us, because I can't come up with one out of all of we talked about that's anywhere near as good as the one that we had for TNT, because that was far better from the bottom.
What about stick your thumb up it?
Stick your thumb up it.
Yeah.
Sticking your thumb up the bottom of the bottle. There we go. We'll think of something around that. We'll be back again next week on Friday, not Thursday. Don't tune in for the live show on Thursday at 8 p.m. because someone's asked me to photograph their Christmas party. I think alcohol will be involved, as well as pictures. And the pictures may degrade based on the amount of alcohol that I've drunk, so we'll see. But we'll be back on Friday next week, definitely, 8 p.m. as normal. And it'll be the big show. No TNT, unfortunately. Unless they want to come back, it's a welcome to. See you next week. Thanks for listening.